Those 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to the Wealth Money Radio Show, brought to you by WealthMoney.org. Byron Dale and Greg Soderbergh are your hosts. This is the only program that addresses the destructive consequences of using a debt money system. Financial slavery is the result when all money is created and put into circulation through loans. How interest grows the debt, but not the money supply, and the effects that interest and debt has on our lives. If you would like to join the program and have a question or a comment, please call 347-884-9499. That's 347-884-9499. And now your hosts, Byron Dale and Greg Soderbergh.
Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Wealth Money Radio, Saturday morning, September 6, 2019. I'm Gregory K. Soderbergh. I'm here with Byron Dale and you. And some people wonder maybe why I'll say Gregory K. Soderbergh, because on the internet there's like 20 Gregory Soderberghs, and there's only one that does this show. So I don't want anybody to be confused about if they're tuned into the right guy. So it's Gregory K. Soderbergh, and here with Byron Dale and you. You know, if we don't borrow and go into debt, there is no money. No money to earn, no matter how hard or smart you work. No money to spend. No money to save. No money to tax. No money to pay those nasty tariffs with. No money, zip, zero, nada. Why? Because today our medium of exchange is all debt. Debt that grows with time, while the money supply only grows with more borrowing, more debt. But you can help make the change by learning about and addressing the issue. Call in now, 347-884-9499. So, Byron, do we got a guest we want to talk to first?
Yes, we do. He's all ones, and you're live on the radio show now, so we want to hear what you got to say.
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh.
It's 1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, Greg, and this is Wes in Rochester.
Okay.
I was going to be the guest on the show.
How in the world did you come up with that number?
Well, it's a number that I use, and I didn't mean to do this to you guys, but I receive a lot of telemarketing calls for stuff that I don't want and need, so I have a long outgoing message that I recorded. Yeah, I recorded it with my son in Japanese, so it's about 2 minutes long, only the start of how heart get through it. And I call them back, and I speak in foreign languages to get removed from their list as quickly as possible. But enough about me.
Oh, forgive me for laughing, but that's really good.
It's a good reaction because swearing is the other alternative to get off their list. But using a foreign language, if you don't speak English, you get marked as a foreign language household with the telemarketers, and that's the fastest way to get off their list. So I usually don't block my number, but I'll call back if you want me to.
No, I don't care. I thought it was probably somebody from New York, but I guess you're not from New York. But we're glad to have you on the show anyway.
Yeah, well, thank you, sir. And I've enjoyed your show before. And I think you guys, this model you've created of having a call-in show is something that I need to learn from you, Greg, how to do a blog talk radio program. And if you guys can each teach one more conservative thinker on this issue how to do this, you can just grow the pie. So,
sure.
I mean,
well,
you're adding value by doing this. You're adding value. And if you want to make that a bigger thing, teach another
couple conservative guys and gals how to make their own show on Blog Talk Radio. So,
well, I think Byron can help you best with that because he engineers the show now, and he's really the guy that can probably help you. So maybe you guys can talk to each other sometime after the show and figure it out.
My real sadness and concern these days is I'm around the community, and Greg, you've noticed that in Rochester as well. Young people don't have any kind of disposable income at all. And, you know, after World War II, the spigots were really opened up for the baby boomers. The greatest generation kind of abandoned the house and let the baby boomers have their way. There were just too many kids in America. And now we have baby boomers grouped up in virtual group homes living together, and that's the only way they can afford to live in our great city that is taxed. Property taxes are shutting down businesses, and then the taxes that they put on not just residential property but commercial property, and then there's a sales tax. So our brilliant leaders don't seem to – our socialist leader who works with Isaiah in Minnesota and CARE, I mean, they don't seem to understand they're not creating affordable housing by making people's housing less affordable by increasing property taxes. And then the choppers aren't coming to Rochester, so we have lots of empty retail space. Restaurants can't afford to operate. They're shuttering up. Greg can attest to this too. But this tax and spend, we need your money more than you do, is really, really destroying our community.
Yeah, well, the tax and spend thing is happening, but one of the elements in the formula for tax and spend is borrowing, spend, and tax. Because we can't spend and we can't tax until we borrow first, and this is what our leaders either don't know or don't want to address. And you know, we're supposed to be a free people. In America, you know, they teach you, you know, Americans wanted to be free, so we formed our country, and we're, you know, but the fact of the matter is we're not free. It looks kind of nice once in a while to, you know, be walking around, you can buy stuff, but the thing is the money creators control the up and down, the vertical and the horizontal, and, you know, they're doing it in a way that drives the debt higher and higher. The debt can never be paid, and the cost of that debt is added into the cost of living, and that's why more and more people can't make ends meet, and they have to tax you and make affordable housing for these people. And it's a shame, and it's what we talk about on this show, and that's the problem, not just taxing and spending, but borrowing. Borrowing is the problem. When is spending a problem? When you got to borrow it before you can spend it. Now you're in debt. Now you're obligated, and now you got to pay back more than what they loaned you. And it's not possible unless they create some more debt for somebody else, and there's new interest on that loan. And you know, we were just talking about what percentage of the cost of living is interest. And we were trying to do a formula, and I thought, well, if there's $72 trillion in American debt, and if there's $14 trillion in money supply, and it's all a debt too, okay, the money is loan principal. So let's say you got $14 trillion in loan principal, and you got $72 trillion in debt. So you subtract the 14 from the 72, and I think you come up with 56 or something like that. $56 trillion, it is just a debt. It isn't even money, and it's growing with time. Now, do you think that would affect your cost of living? You know?
Yeah.
And yeah. So this is the problem, and people need to talk about it, and it drives all the other problems. This debt, it drives, you know. And the countries that are arguing about tariffs, they got a tariff war, oh, my gosh. You know why? Because they're all short of money because they all got to borrow the money that they have. And this tariff thing and the taxes isn't because we got too much money. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the growing and increasing shortage of money created through creating all money as loans. What do you think of that, Byron or Wes?
You sparked me.
I have a letter from Robert Hemphill, who was with the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, and he said, if all the bank loans were paid, no one would have a bank deposit, and there would not be a dollar of coin or currency in circulation. This is a staggering thought. We are completely dependent on the commercial banks. Someone has to borrow every dollar we have in circulation, cash or credit. If the banks create ample synthetic money, we are prosperous, which isn't quite true, I don't think. If not, we starve, which is obviously true. We are absolutely without a permanent money system, where when one gets a complete grasp on the picture of the tragic absurdity of our hopeless position, it's almost incredible. But there it is. It, the banking problem, is the most important subject intelligent people can investigate and reflect upon. It is so important that our present civilization may collapse unless it becomes widely understood and the deficit remedied by it very soon. But you get a lot of writers, you know, say there's something wrong, but they never say exactly what is wrong or what would you do. Because if you're going to understand what you've got to do to correct it, well, then you have to know what is the real root of the problem and what change do we have to make in order to correct that problem. And it's pretty obvious. Go ahead.
Byron, when you're reading that, you caught that incorrect thing that Hemphill said. If the banks create ample synthetic money, everything's good and we prosper. But, let's talk about that from the standpoint of how money's created and how the debt grows, because initially that's what they did in China, started making loans to all the actual people of China. Man, they created all this money and things really started happening and things were really great. But then the debt catches up with them. And, you tell the story, you relate it, the little anecdote, it's kind of like making babies, okay? Borrowing money is like making babies. It's kind of fun at the first, okay? And it might be even fun for a little while thereafter, but then sooner or later, somebody has to have the baby. And so when Hemphill says, if the banks create ample synthetic money, we're prosperous, that's true, but only for a while, until the debt starts growing. And the other thing that he talked about, that the thing would collapse, and it has never collapsed since he wrote that, and people before him wrote about the collapse. And we've had recessions, okay, they last for a while, but the money creators, they're not going to let this thing totally collapse where it gets out of control. They want to maintain control. So in the process, in the long run, all that's going to happen is that you and I and everyone else will work harder and longer as we get older to have a constantly lower standard of living, and our leadership, if you want to call it that, will get more corrupt and we'll have more tyranny politically, socially, economically, and it'll just get worse and worse for more and more people, but it ain't going to totally collapse. So I just wanted to touch on those two points, the collapse and the synthetic money.
Well, guys, can I throw a bone in here? Because I had never in my lifetime heard any rational human being make a case for debt. But I heard it on a local radio show here in Rochester. I won't mention names or the station call numbers, but it's a Tuesday-Thursday show with two characters, and one of them's a good conservative guy who drops facts, and the other guy's a liberal who drops feelings. And Greg by now knows what I'm talking about. But one guy was talking about debt, and the other guy came on and said, well, I can... In my view, debt is a good thing because those people in the future who aren't born yet are going to be using that road or that bridge or that school, and they should assume part of the cost of paying for that property or that infrastructure. And my head just exploded because I had never heard of such an irresponsible notion as passing the baton of debt forward to an unborn generation. And it's actually a talking point when you think about it. There's a certain manic genius in it,
but it undoes any will to be responsible, to be responsible stewards of what we were given by our ancestors.
Well, but the trouble is, what he said is absolutely true, because when you start out and you get that loan, that's really nice, because now you can go buy something you probably really needed. But then things do get better. And then all of a sudden you realize, well, wait a minute, I only borrowed, we'll just use this as a number, $100, but now I owe $110. Well, that's the first year, if that's just simple interest even, not compound interest. Okay, so I got to pay that. Well, then I haven't paid any on the principal, so now I've got the interest again to pay. Okay, now if I go in and say, okay, I need to borrow some money to pay that interest, now you have more debt and the interest gets bigger. And that interest gets bigger and bigger. And as Hemp, I can't think of his name right now, but wrote to Drew Foster and said, well, to get the money, you have to pay the interest, you have to get it from somebody else's borrowed money. So if you don't borrow more money, then you can't even pay the interest unless somebody else borrowed money. Well, the only way you can do that is you just constantly shove it down the line. And it always, every time, ends up in the next generation, and then they start off with a greater debt than you did, and then the same process heads, and you just constantly get the debt growing all the time, because you can get rid of the principal, and that's extinguished. When you borrow $100 and you pay back $100, well, then that money comes out of your checking account and it goes to zero and goes into the bank's account because now you've paid, so your loan goes to zero. But that's not if you don't include any interest. Now, when you include the interest, now you've had to put somebody else in debt to get the interest, and the interest isn't taken out of circulation. It is then moved on into someplace else's debt, and you can't ever get rid of 100% of the debt, and therefore you have to constantly grow the debt over time. And if you want to prove that and see it with your own eyes, go on the computer and look up the debt clock, and it will show you how much the debt grows all the time. And if you do a lot of research on it, you'll see the debt has constantly growing all the time, which means every generation has to get deeper in debt than the last one. When I first got started into this, we didn't even hardly owe a total $1 trillion. But now, just the government alone owes 22 to 23 trillion, and that's not counting to all the other government groups and everything else that's also borrowing this money. And see, the problem we have that you brought up in the first place, these guys have the belief that while the people have plenty of money, we just got to take some up from them so we can do the things we think we should do. They never stop to consider that, wait a minute, that money is only created when somebody borrows, and then when they borrow, the interest kicks in. But the interest cannot be paid. It just constantly grows and grows and grows. And Greg just explained, now, according to the debt clock, we have, and this is M2, not M1, that we actually use for cash, you know, that we can actually buy and sell with. You can't do that with M2, is around $14 trillion. Well, if your total debt is over $73 trillion, how could you possibly pay that with only a $14 trillion worth of money supply? And
well,
that
maybe
isn't even money that you could actually spend on the street. That gets down to less than that, probably about $3 or $4 trillion. And see, now, and these people don't understand that. They don't think about it. It's just like you said, the one guy said, well, debt is good because, man, you can borrow and then you can do things you couldn't do before. But he never got into explaining, well, okay, then how do we ever get out of that debt?
Well,
it's not hard. We just got to steal some money from somebody else, and then we can pay it. But they never stop to consider the money that is used to pay the interest is never created any place as money, only as more debt. And go ahead, whoever wants to talk.
Yeah, well,
I would just I don't know if those guys were talking about, you know, if they really knew how money is created in debt, but when the one guy talked about debt was good, I would ask him, just like I've always asked on this show, and nobody's ever called in and given me a reason, but I would ask him, says, well, you know, why do we need to have debt to have money? You know, and that's the question. And, you know, there can be money without debt. Historically, it has happened, and we can do that. But, you know, most of the folks out there don't know how to create the money and put it into a circulation without debt in a way that does not benefit the special interest. And, you know, these people that you're talking about, all the people that have needs and wants, and they go to the congressman and then they tax, you know, so that they can do things for certain people that need all this stuff. These needs constantly grow because of that money system. And the problem with them fixing stuff through taxation is that the things that they do through taxation do not promote the general welfare. They promote interest. And it's...
You're breaking up, Greg.
Well, somebody got dishes or something.
Hello?
Yeah, Wes, are you there?
I had a communication problem there too. Probably just I just shut the door and that made a little bit of a noise.
What I'm getting at is even with this taxation, they do not do the right thing because all they're doing with taxation is fixing certain things for certain people or certain groups. And all these things, these problems are caused by the debt money system creating shortages of money where the people cannot work and produce and take care of themselves. And those legislators, they need to ask themselves, when somebody asks them to do something, hey, how's about doing something for the Boy Scouts? Doesn't that sound warm and fuzzy, like really, you know, justifiable? But ask himself, well, will this promote the general welfare? Will everyone benefit from it? And the answer would be no. And if they kept doing that, maybe they'd get down to the root of the problem that's causing all these problems. So anyway.
Well, but see, they don't understand that it don't make any difference what you do with the money. You got to borrow it first. Somebody has to. And, of course, if they borrow it, then they have to pay interest. And then that interest goes into the cost of doing business, so they have to raise the price of everything they sell in order to make pay their interest. And they never stop to think that the money to pay the interest does not exist except through somebody else's borrowed money.
Yep.
And there are some people that say banks can create money as investments. And that could be true. But see, we never know what that money is or where it is. All we could possibly know is what they've told us, and the Federal Reserve Bank has told us, is yes, we can create money as loans and investments, but nobody will explain what those investments are. In fact, I had a guy on Facebook come out and said, well, I can assure you banks can create money as investments. And I said, okay, that's fine. If you know all about this, then please explain to me, do they only do it, create money and spend it as investment, and what are those investments, what can they invest in, or can they also just spend it to buy anything they want, like maybe a $23 million yacht that I see this morning on news was up for sale. But they never ever get to that point of saying, well, where does the money actually come from in the first place? It has to come from someplace. It has to be created somewhere. And because money is not a natural reproduction. I mean, it's not a cow, so it don't have calves. It's not people, so they still have babies and all that. So, see, in those situations, something else is created that grows. But money does not. It's created as a loan, but there is no money created to pay the interest because you can't create the money to pay the interest, you know, and there may be a few instances where the banks may create money as an investment and goes into circulation, but we don't know about that. We can't see any of it because if you go to the bank and you ask for money, you get Federal Reserve notes, which is nothing but a promise to pay, and isn't even actually real money in reality, because it's just a promise to pay that they don't pay. And see, this is the things that people don't, they don't want to really get in deep into the understanding of how this all works. And the first time that I ever talked to a banker about this, he said, well, it works this way. You come in and borrow, and you sign a promissory note. That promissory note goes on to the books of the bank as an asset, and it goes on to your books as a liability, as something you owe later. Okay, then the banks take the money they're supposed to borrow you, and they put it into your checking account as interest-bearing debt. They put it in there that that is something that they put on their books as a liability. Well, if liability means the same thing when the banks have that as it does when the people have it, it means that they have just put something, numbers in the, your bank account so you can spend it, but that's only a promise to pay. And now, recently I had a guy send me a speech made by a banker in England, and he said, well, there's one thing about the Bank of England that nobody else can do, is they can, their promise to pay becomes a payment. And of course, anybody that thinks a little bit can know that can't possibly be true, because it's impossible for a promise to pay to become the thing. And so I wrote back on Facebook, I said, well, if that's true, then if you send me a promise to pay to give me a horse and never give me the horse, well, in a week or so I'll have the horse, huh? And I never get any answers back from those kind of comments, because they don't want to think the whole thing through. And the only way you can solve this problem, and we need to find out this remedy, and the remedy, the problem is money's created as debt. So that means the remedy can only be creating money without debt. And now if you go to the United States Constitution, it says Congress was given the authority to create, to coin money. Well, see, most of these idiots never look at that. They think, well, that clearly means coins. But see, you can't, because if it means coins, you'd have to say coin coins. Because if it's just coin, well, that don't do anything, because you haven't even created anything with a coin. The coin is a coin. It's a physical thing. But if it's a verb, it means action. Well, now, if you could do an action that created money, then you could create money almost any way you wanted to. It doesn't really say, and you'll find these guys that write whole big books about it. I can't think of his name, but I've met him personally. And it's all, well, it's got to be gold and silver, because that in the 10th Amendment, they said the state cannot produce any money except gold and silver. But somehow they twist that, and that only applied to states, not to the federal government. When they said to the federal government, they just said they could coin money. They didn't say how or what or what, but it's only common sense. If you're going to create money that benefits the general population, you have to create it as a payment. Well, then if you go on down in the same Constitution, you'll say, as Congress said, provide for post offices and post roads. Well, I don't know if that's a total answer or not, but if you created money to fund the post offices and to pay for all the building the roads in the United States and states and federal government in any place, then think of all that money that would go into circulation with no debt to anybody and paid to somebody who worked to produce something that would benefit everybody. Because most everybody is benefited by having a mail. But, you know, you can't, you can send a lot of messages on computers, but it's pretty hard to send something physical through the computer. I mean, you, if you're going to send them something physical, you have to go through the post office. You can't go through the computer. And they may be able to do that someday in the future, but they sure can't now. So now you've got something that's really a benefit to everybody, so they can move things to people. Like, if you buy anything on the Internet, you may all be able to go in there and just send them so much money, and all of a sudden it gets mailed to you. But it has to get mailed to you. So then if you go ahead and create to pay for the roads, now you've created this something that you cannot have any kind of movement of goods if you don't have transportation, a way to move it. Because even the mail, if you didn't have a road to move the product down the road, you couldn't get it there. So if you would create the money for those two things, then you would have money go into circulation without debt to anyone and would benefit everyone, and it would go in as a paycheck. And you wouldn't have to pay it back or anything else, and there wouldn't be no debt to anyone, not to the government. And see, there's a lot of people out there that says, well, what we need to have a United States notes. But United States notes, according to the government, I have a letter someplace that says, well, that, you know, that's a physical thing, and you owe us. I mean, the government did that. They spent that into circulation, yes, but it went on the books as a debt the government had. Well, if you do it this other way, we just explained, then you don't even have a debt to the government even. So now you have a money system that works for the benefit of everyone, and it grows, and it don't get extinguished. Because if you have to pay it back and it gets extinguished, then that money goes away. So every time somebody pays off a loan, the money supply goes down until somebody else borrows some, and they can't even pay the interest without having somebody else get in debt anyway. So you have a system that cannot do anything but be wrecked. And that, now I'll turn it over to Greg or whoever wanted to talk.
You just sparked what you just said explains why when I bought a car, I was prepared to pay cash for it and wanted to. And I was told by the finance guy at the dealership that my credit rating would go up if I financed the vehicle instead of just buying it outright. So I financed it, and yeah, my credit rating was at 850 or something until I paid off the car loan. And when I was done, the 2 months, 1 month or 2 months after I finished paying off the loan, my credit rating went down to 780. I wasn't in debt. I had no out, and I pay my credit cards off at the end of each month. So what benefit do you get? Huh?
Well, Wes, think about the fact, too, what you paid for the car and then what you paid in interest over the life of the loan. So the car actually cost you more money than what it would have cost you, and you got a crummy credit rating on top of it.
And I ended up transferring – I was so upset with their debt financing that I ended up transferring it to my my own credit union, which has nothing to do with them. So I got my credit union to step in and get me out of it. So anyway, what do you guys say?
Well, see, that's what we're talking about. See, this is the real – and he talked about, you know, you got to figure out some way to – it may collapse until you understand the deficit. Well, see, you don't understand what the problem is unless you understand that that money is created as interest-bearing debt. Now you have you really understand what the real problem is, because you can't have any money without having to borrow it from somebody. And as soon as you do, just like Greg explained to you, your car cost you a lot more when you paid the interest on it, too, as well as just the actual cost of the car. And then you also have to consider, too, that all these cars, somebody borrowed money to have them on the lot and probably to make them in the first place. Well, see, they've got to get that money out, because otherwise they'd be going the hole all the time. So then they shove the interest onto the cost of the thing you were buying. So the cost of things constantly go up. And, of course, the bigger the debt up, the bigger the interest does. Even if you drop the interest rate, it don't seem as bad, but it's still slowly growing the debt. So yep. Now you're having a real problem, because the problem is you can't get rid of the debt. No matter what you do, you can't get rid of the debt. If you do, just like he said, if you got rid of the money, if the debts were all paid, well, you wouldn't have a dollar coin in circulation, coin or checks or anything else. So you wouldn't have any money to operate again unless you borrowed again, or we finally got the federal government to wake up and actually create the money and spend it in. Now, I have researched this an awful lot, and if you go in and look at it, it's no question that the Congress did what they were supposed to do. They set up a Bureau of the Mint in the Treasury to mint coins. And then years later, they thought, well, we needed to go to this paper money because we didn't have enough gold and stuff like that, because there's a limit to that. So then we will create money as a paper. So they go in and they create a Bureau of Printing and Engraving in the Treasury. And they now go ahead and they are the only ones that print any currency. But they don't spend that currency into circulation or give it away or anything. They sell it to the banks for the cost of printing. So now the banks say, well, we get that for the cost of printing, but it's both an asset and a liability, so we don't make a profit. But then they go ahead in the same literature, they tell you, but we do sell that to the other banks at face value. Now, if I buy a $100 bill for 10 cents, and yeah, it goes on to my books as an asset and a liability, that sounds good. But when I sell it to somebody for a dollar, for 100 pennies, well, then I have to have had a profit. And see, the whole system of the banking system and the people who handle it are all talking and nonsense. They say one thing and then they say the other thing and they say they're both true. Well, I'm sorry, those things can't be that way. You can't have something say, and this is true, and then say it works exactly different and say it works true. So they keep us confused. And, of course, then these economists, they all go to college and they get all this knowledge and everything. But most of it isn't true because they don't teach you the actual creation of money involves the extension of credit. In other words, you got to borrow it and you got to pay interest on it. And then you get back and you can't get out of the debt. But the problem is to get the people to believe and actually want to do it, because they've convinced them so that that's what money is. It's just debt, and you can't, if you don't have any debt, you can't have any money, which is an absolute lie. The truth is you can't have real money if you do have a debt.
I think there's some people, though, who don't think on that level. I think it's really for people like AOC, Cortez, out there in the Bronx. I think for her it's really as simple as debt and taxation are the most efficient ways to take your stuff. And I it's like, it's a raw kind of idea. It's just extremely raw. It's not, it's uncooked. They just want to take your stuff. And debt is the easiest way for them to put a yoke on you.
With a woman like that who absolutely don't have a clue about anything she talks about. Because now I happen to have been in the ranching business for a long time. And they say cows fart, and I guarantee you cows do not fart. They have three stomachs, and they do not fart at all. Now, they do pass maybe some gas through their mouth, because when cows eat it, and they swallow it, and then they lay down to rest, and then they cough it back up and chew it some more, and then it goes into another stomach. And then that goes into another stomach, and by the time they get their third stomach, there's no gas. Now, yes, pardon my language, but they do shit, no question about it. They go to the bathroom just like everybody else does. But see, and I looked that up on the internet one time because I wanted to know what they said. And they said, well, yeah, cows have all kinds of, you know, farts. And that simply is a false statement. It's not true. Just like almost everything she says is not a true statement. You can say things and you can make them say, but that doesn't make it true.
Every time she opens her mouth, she's creating inert gas, and it's she's contributing to global warming probably. But no, the thing about cows,
well, the first place, there's no way of knowing if there's any global warming, because they've been saying that for years, but none of those things have happened. And I guarantee you, it would be impossible to determine what was global warming anyway. Because we just had one of the coldest years we've had, and that again is nothing but a big flat lie.
She is characteristic of people who don't believe in our capitalist model. She wants to take your stuff Venezuela style, and you're right, she's an idiot, and she doesn't have any schooling in these areas. But very practically, she represents a group of people who have been sort of placed in our midst deliberately since the 1960s, who believe that you can wake up in the morning and pick your breakfast off a tree. And those of us who come from a ranching, farming background, who understand that to create value, you have to invest and you have to work hard. You don't just pick it off a tree in the morning and next time you're hungry, you pick it off a tree again. We come from a land with harsh winters. And my people out of North Dakota knew all about that when they lived in a lean-to, their first winter out there. And then they come out from that and they started building their farm and their homestead. And when you got 40 below to deal with and it's coming soon in 9 months or 6 months, you better plan ahead, right?
I want to get back to a minute about what she says, because when I looked that up in the computer and they said not only that, the cows' emissions destroy soil, rich soil. And that's when I knew for a fact it was an absolute lie all the way through, because years ago on the ranch, we had some dead hardpan in one corner of the field. I wanted to get rid of it, so I took my manure spreader and I spread a lot of manure on that. And the neighbor come by and said, "Oh, Byron, you're probably going to kill that soil because you put way too much manure on it." And I said, "I don't think so." So anyway, I finally decided I'd had enough on it, that I could get rid of the hardpan by working it in. So I went clear down to the other end, and I put in about half as much manure on that end, and then in the middle didn't have any. So then I planted all the oats, and that fall when the oats got big, and where I had the most manure, that oats got high as the back wheels on the tractor. That in the middle, where I didn't put any, got about 14 inches high, or maybe 15 or 16, that was it. And the one where I had half as much, that I got about halfway up on the wheel. So now I, from personal observation without question, I knew that a cow manure makes great fertilizer. It's the best fertilizer there is. It really makes the soil richer, not destroy the richness of the soil like they wrote in that article in the computer. And they're lying for a reason. And that reason is to confuse the people so they don't really understand what is true. Now go ahead and I'll shut up.
No, I have to continue with what you're saying. I totally agree. And furthermore, the problem with beef that they have is it's a high protein source. So when you're coming from a plantation agricultural style, as they had in Puerto Rico, her homeland, plantation style agriculture, they were feeding people plantains, beans, and rice. These were staple crops, and they were plantation meals. Wherever slavery was prevalent in Spanish territories, in Spanish conquered lands. So low protein, high carbohydrate. You can work all day on a plate full of rice and beans and plantains, and they're very inexpensive, high yield products. Now, when you get into high protein diets, you start having a population with a little more sense about book learning, shall we say, and problem solving. So if you're dealing with a low protein diet, your brain is starved for nourishment. And you know, let's just leave it at that. But I don't want to continue too much about that. But
I want to talk about taking your stuff.
Just a minute, Greg. I see we got Rule on. Let's give him a chance to talk, and then we can go on. Just a second. I got to push the right button here. Okay, Rule, you're on. Let's see what you had to say about all this.
Yeah, I just called in and got in on the last few minutes there of it. But I think what Greg's going to probably hit on, and I think we just need to acknowledge that we have in our pocket, we are dealing with a foreign entity. And when I say foreign entity, it is outside of constitutional legal grounds. And the Constitution specifically states in Article 1, Section 8 and Section 10, Congress alone shall have power. And that is a key word when it comes to the money creation, because that power, you take away that power, you take away all sovereignty, everything. And it was our government's sole power and responsibility to create money. And what now, when you pull your money out of your pocket, you have a Federal Reserve. It's issued to the United States, not by, but to, because the Congress lost its power. And so all these things that you're talking about, you know, losing rights and whatever, the rights are being taken because the power of Congress was taken years ago. Is that correct, Greg?
Right. I mean, we don't have rule by law anymore. We have economic rule. And Wes is talking about Cortez, and then she's about taking stuff. The debt money system is about taking your stuff because the debt money system funnels all the wealth and real property over time to fewer and fewer people. And, you know, when you think about it, here's where you're at. Even without charging interest on a loan, you or me, even our government, someone has to go downtown. Now imagine the town where you live. You go downtown to a local bank, and you go in, and there's a person in there just like you. 10 fingers, 10 toes, 2 eyes, 2 ears. Okay? And you have to go to them and go into debt to them to get the numbers that they don't have until they create them and put them in your checking account. And you need to go in debt to that person in order to have a medium of exchange. Now, even without the interest, you're in economic servitude. Involuntary economic servitude, because there is no other kind of money right now out there to use. You have to use the money that they create. And that person, you know, they always present themselves as a business like any other, like the furniture store, the car dealership, and they're not like that. They have a special, they've taken a special advantage, and they control everything. And I know I was talking to Byron or someone else before the show, but when you go down there to that person, he's just like you. Maybe he's in a club that you're in, but he can create all the money, and he decides if Wes is going to get that loan for that car. Maybe I don't like Wes. Maybe Wes said something that I heard, and it pissed me off. I'm not going to give him a loan. Okay, or he's gonna decide how much he's gonna create for Wes, you know, and he's gonna decide all the terms and repayment terms and everything. He decides. He's the judge, and they're sitting right downtown in your town in a little building. They call a bank, and they're running the whole show. And as a matter of fact, they're running it into the ground. They've stolen your America. They've stolen your freedom. And that's where your rights are gone, and that's where your courts are so corrupt. This has to change. The money has to be created and spent, not lent, into circulation. And it needs to be done so as an earned payment, not just dropped out of helicopters for everybody to pick up whatever they want. It don't work. It has to be for earned production, and production that we all benefit from, that promotes the general welfare. And the only thing in the Constitution that really says what that is post offices and post roads, or roads and bridges and post offices. And then we could not have to be taxed for the fuels and all the rest of that crap. And when they go by your house and fix the road, they assess your property taxes to pay for it. All that goes away, and we don't have the debt. And now we have a medium exchange that we can earn that isn't growing with debt in time. You're not losing purchasing power. It maintains its purchasing power over time. And you can actually save it without hurting someone else. Because right now, if you're saving money, it's someone else's loan. And the debt side is growing with time. And you got it in your savings account. They can't even get it. Don't matter how smart they are, how hard they work, how smart they work. Doesn't matter. It's not there for them to get. So it needs to be changed. But just think about taking the stuff. That's what this system is about.
Do you have any other comment there, Rule, before I get in?
Well, Greg's 100% correct. I keep, you know, I just thought about this long and hard the last 2 days, and the reality is everybody recognizes a foreign object Greg sent me a little funny joke about our money being unidentified financial objects. And, you know, we're battling so-called foreigners or illegals at the border. But why don't we battle the foreign instrument that's running our lives into the ground? The number one thing that, you know, Greg and I are both reading books by the first woman to ever get a master's degree in the United States in economics, and the book was written in 1935. And the author's Gertrude Kugan. She was a master at understanding farm economics and everything, and she said there is not one iota of liberty without financial freedom. It can't exist. There are two opposites.
Yep. Amen.
Problem, though, what Greg was saying, the lady at the bank don't have a clue what she's actually really doing. She's just doing what she's told to do. And the first banker I ever talked to about this, he said, well, I never ever thought about where the money come from. I was just taught how to look at it, and, you know, and if I thought that they had a plan that would work, well, then I'd loan them the money. And if I had a plan that I didn't think would work at all, then of course I wouldn't loan them the money. But I never even stopped to think about where the money came from. And that's the way with the people in the local banks. They don't have a clue what's going on. You got to get higher up into the Federal Reserve System. And they do know, but they don't want to address it, because Greg and I have personally been in the Federal Reserve boardroom in Washington, D.C., and visited with them. And they was explaining it, and I said, well, I just really don't understand quite what you're doing. So let's see if I can explain this, I can understand this a little better. And they had a napkin holder there full of napkins, and so I took some of them out, and I said, now you guys loan money. And I said, yeah, and so I loaned everybody on each side of me, about three deep, some of them napkins. And so then we went on and about how it worked, and I said, okay, now you charge interest on this, don't you? And they said, yes. And so, and then you got to pay the principal and the interest, and yes. And said, I said, okay, would all you guys that I've loaned you, probably I'll say three napkins, would you please give me the four back that you owe me? And, of course, it wasn't possible, because you only put in, we'll say 10, and we had three people, so there was three people with 10, and so that'd make 60. Well, there was only 60 out there. But they had to give me, you know, 10% more than that to get out, and that 10% doesn't exist. And you can do that with anybody at any time, and they get in the same problem. They can't get out of it. And I did that in court. I did it, when I hit it, and the guy that I'd loaned the money to, he had given me a pin for collateral. And when I got it down to where I wanted him, and I said, okay, now you got to pay me the loan plus the interest, and he looked at me a while, and he looked at his hand and the money, and he looked at, and then he reached in his pocket and pulled out his pen and laid it on the money and gave it to me. And so I turned to the judge and I said, well, that's what I'm unhappy about, because it sure didn't take me long to get all his money, did it? All his property. And the judge just went wild. He was just mad and angry as you could get, because I don't know how much he knew, but he realized all of a sudden he'd been taken for a run. And they get mad as heck. They don't want to have anything like that happen to them. So I don't think the bulk of the people have a clue at all about how this really works and the consequences, but most of them just don't want to think about it. And if they don't think about it, then it can't do anything and get worse. And when I first got into this, I had a lot of reporters call me, and we would talk, and then finally they'd get, you know, they didn't know what to do, so they'd say, well, what would you do to make it different? And that must have been the answer that always shut everybody up, because they just thought they had me now. And so I just clearly said, well, the government should create the money and spend it in, and then we wouldn't have any debt, the government wouldn't have any debt, and we'd have the money supply, And boy, I'll tell you, when you give them that answer, they shut up right now and hung up.
Well,
because for some reason, the people can't mentally, emotionally deal with this problem. I don't know if they think it's too big that they can't get their heads or hands around it or what. I have no idea. But for some reason, and I don't have a clue what it is, but there's a that they just can't hardly deal with it. And yet, if we don't deal with it, we're eventually this country will collapse, and it may collapse because you have idiots like that that we was talking about a while ago that clearly don't have a brain about anything. She just has a smart mouth, sounding smart, and won't give up, and apparently nobody wants to challenge her. And it wouldn't be hard at all to challenge her and prove she didn't know anything about anything. Because, I mean, and I guarantee you, and I fed a lot of cattle and I learned a lot about nutrition. And if you don't have enough protein, you don't grow near as good and near as fast, and you're not near as healthy as you do if you have enough protein. I've seen it over and over again. The first time I seen it, I didn't understand it. Later, I did. And I guarantee you, it just makes a world of difference. Well, now, what they're trying to do is take the protein out of our system and then and give me some kind of other crap in that they claim it's that, and you're not going to have near the healthiest people. You're not going to have all these things. But see, when you have people that clearly don't know a thing about what they're talking about, they don't have any problem telling all kinds of lies because they don't even know they're lying, probably, because she's
well,
that stupid.
Well, the thing is that, you know, the less nutritional foods isn't an intent to create less nutritional foods. That isn't the purpose. The purpose of it is to cut the cost of producing those foods, and that's what happens when you have a debt money system. Everybody gets constantly squeezed, and so what happens is they create shortcuts in production, and they do it to try to maintain profitability, and it's happening all over. I mean, things are made cheaper, less durable. You don't even get warranties on things anymore. And it's all because they're all trying to make it happen in a system that it cannot happen for everyone. And, you know, so that's, and I write about that aspect of it in one of our books and go into it a little bit more. But it's really not that they're trying to be nasty, mean people. They're just trying to earn more loan principal.
Well, I think that's true to a certain point, but up at the level, there's a level someplace up there that they know for a fact what they're doing and how they're going to do about doing it.
Well, they got to keep the slaves fairly healthy if they're going to keep, you know, the slaves to borrow money from them and keep trying to pay back this interest. They can't kill them all off, otherwise they won't have anybody to lend to, and then they'll be in real trouble. But anyway, so
you got anything? Go ahead, Rule. Have you got anything to say on that?
Well, I just think people need to quit playing games with themselves. That's what they're doing. Everybody's playing a game that is unwinnable. The odds are extremely against you unless you're in the elite club, you know, at the very top. They want to keep this thing going because your labor, your talent, your time, your creativity is being ripped off, plain and simple.
Yeah. Yeah. The producers.
Go ahead.
The non producers benefit at the expense of the producers. That's what it is. They get all the property entitled to real property and the wealth. It funnels to fewer and fewer people. And that's, you know, talk about this country collapsing. It pretty much has collapsed as far as the principles that it was built on. It doesn't follow those principles or that was supposed to, intended to follow. It doesn't do that anymore. And basically all that will happen to America is it will just turn into another tyrannical sort of government that you, when you went to school years ago in American school, they taught you about how nasty the communists were and dictators and all that stuff. And that's just the kind of country that we are becoming, and it will just get worse and worse. And so, you know, it's about freedom. It's about liberty and justice for all. It's about, you know, fairness and honesty. And we're so far from that now that really America doesn't exist except in name. And but if there's people out there that want to have a place like America and form a more perfect union, then we need to change this money system.
Well, in the first place, we have all these people that swear an oath to uphold the Constitution and never read it. They don't have a clue what it says. That's easy to see if you just watch what they're talking about. They don't have a clue about what the Constitution actually really says. I mean, it's
and
amazing. And you see it all the time. And
they
you
get
know,
by with
I was in. Go ahead.
They get by with it because most of the American people haven't read the Constitution. So if that guy up there talks whatever's coming out of his mouth, they wouldn't even know for sure if he's read it or not because they never read it either. They don't even teach it in the schools, I don't think. I mean, if you don't...
Not anymore, I don't think they do.
Yeah, I mean, so if you don't teach it, how can you preserve, protect, and defend it, which is something to do with that oath that you're talking about? How can you preserve...
Well, and they don't, and then these schools are all run by, you know, the liberals have taken over and got all the professors in there, and that's what their job is, to teach them, you know, not the, what's good for the country, but what is, how it would be much better if we had a socialist, communist country. Then it'd be much better, and you people have to learn and understand that, or you won't be any good for anything. And it's just exactly the opposite, and that's where all this stuff comes from, is from the colleges. And my granddaughters went to high school, and there was only one of them, and that was one of my granddaughters that wasn't a socialist. I mean, the rest of them, they never questioned it. They just, that, well, this is the way it is, got to be. This is the way we've been taught it's got to be. And that's what we're going to be when we get into college. That's what we got. That's the only thing we get taught. And, you know, and everybody else has just fell asleep and never paid any attention to what was taught in colleges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're just basically treasonous people who want to change our constitutional republic to a socialist or communist or some other kind of government. And that's how we legitimize all these wars that we've been in and the loss of our people in these wars and the crippling of our people in these wars and the cost of these wars, the debt driving us deeper and deeper in debt to have these wars is supposedly to keep our country from being taken over, to keep it from being made a communist or a socialist or some other kind of state, yet, like you say, Byron, you got these kids, you got people in school, and they're all for it. Well, what in the hell do we got a military for? You know, bring the military and hell, but let it go to hell, because that's apparently what these people want. And, you know, I mean, to me, I just don't see why you even want to live in America if we have people who don't believe in freedom, don't believe in those founding principles, don't believe in forming a more perfect union. What in the hell are we doing?
Well, we're not doing anything, the bulk of us. I mean, there are a few of us are. There's no question about that. And even them, a lot of them, you give these, well, like Judicial Watch, for example, that... They do a
yeah.
lot of things, but they will not address the money issue. They just won't do it. And you get the Heritage Foundation, and they're the same way. They simply will not address the money issue. They just won't do it. So, therefore, you can't get anything to do that. And that's what you've got to constantly try to do, is to get people to wake up and stop and think. And, of course, that's why we have this show. And I think we have a lot of listeners out there. I see evidence of it all the time. But most of them don't open up and actually say something. Well, they know
yeah.
it isn't right, but they. One of them told me, well, just because they'll kill us if we do. Well, most people don't want to die, but we're all going to die sooner or later, I understand.
How come those people have no problem with the military people going and dying? how come that's okay, but it's not okay for those people to serve their country, and they don't even have to pick up a weapon. They can pick up the phone and call their congressman. But they're still in the land of the free. They are not brave when it gets right down to it. But I wanted to say something before the show's over, that if you're in Minnesota Congressional District 3, be advised that a person by the name of Leslie Davis is running for that seat, understands the money problem pretty darn good, and he'll push for money created and spent in the circulation debt-free. The District 3 encompasses Hennepin, Carver, Anoka counties, west, south, and north of Minneapolis, Brooklyn Park and Coon Rapids to the northeast, Bloomington to the south, and Eden Prairie, Edina, Maple Grove, Plymouth, Minnetonka, and Wayzata to the west with Champlin. So if that's you, you can learn more at LeslieDavis.org. And also, a little anecdote, I work with a lady, she's 72, I think, but she has a history of being in the banking business. Her father was a banker, and you know, she was proud of that and proud of her father and everything. And then I came along, and of course, I, you know, talk about the money and the truth and how it works and everything. And for a long time, I didn't know if this was going to cost our friendship or not. But then one day, she came into me and she looked at me and she said, "Greg, so it's all debt, right? It's all debt." And I said, "Yes." And her head went down, and she turned around and walked away and acted like she was really sad or that something had happened when she realized that it was all debt. And this might go back to what Byron was talking about, too, that people working in the banking business don't even know what they're doing, a lot of them. But when she saw the truth, it made her sad. And then my only other hope is that maybe she would work to get it changed like we're trying to do. But so just kind of a little story there.
Well, and that's the way it is. And with that, I see it's time we got to close. So I want to thank the people who came in and shared their show with us. We appreciate that, and we're glad to have them. And so I think that's it. I thank for our listeners and thank them for listening to the show. And hopefully in time we will get enough people who are brave enough and bold enough to actually get out and help us address this issue to where the congressman and things cannot look past it.
Byron and Greg want to thank you for listening to the Wealth Money Radio Show. Please visit our website at wealthmoney.org. We would appreciate your support by purchasing the books and materials. Don't just purchase the books, but study the information we have presented and tell others the truth of our debt-based system, the problems interest causes, and the slavery it promotes. Thank you for your support.